Hey everyone, I'm Yasmin Nouri and you're listening to the Behind Her Empire podcast. I'm on a mission to showcase successful self-made women who share honest stories and lessons of what it really takes to create the life you want and build your own empire. If you've been listening to the show, you know, just like you, I've been on my own personal journey to build my empire. I started my business Bia to help women tackle their period problems and hormonal imbalances using a natural whole foods approach. If you're suffering from bad cramps, irregular periods, fatigue, bloating, stay tuned because a little bit later in the podcast, I'll share a bit more about my company, Bia. But for now, let's jump into today's episode. I want to welcome this week's guest, Carolyn Aronson, to our show today. Carolyn is the founder and CEO of It's a 10 Hair Care, a professional hair care line that's dedicated to providing high quality, luxury hair care products for every hair type. Carolyn rose from a challenging background of foster homes and adoption to creating one of the most widely recognized and consumed hair care brands in the world. Despite all this success, she definitely was not an overnight success. Carolyn prides herself for working hard and learning from her failed brands and products before striking gold with the Miracle Leave-In Spray that really took off. She owns 100% of her multi-$100 million brand, and the products are sold in more than 25,000 professional salons, thousands of retail locations like Sally Beauty and Ulta, and the brand is now in over 70 countries around the world. In this week's episode, Carolyn talks to us about her upbringing as a foster care child and what she believes shaped her approach to entrepreneurship and her relationship with money, which is so critical in her journey. She also shares her experience as a hairdresser, hustling to make ends meet for many years, how she lost everything when she started her first business, and how she didn't give up even after losing it all. Carolyn also shares all the challenges she had to overcome in the process of launching her second hair care brand and the biggest learning she had when it came to partnership, marketing, product development, and so much more. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you, Yasmin. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, I had to hold myself back when we got on video because I have a million questions. I'm so inspired by you. I know you're in the middle of writing a book. So if anyone wants more details, we can dive in there. But before we go into your really incredible story, I actually want to start with asking you a question where you mentioned in another interview that every entrepreneur needs to crawl, walk, then run. Tell me more about what you mean by that.
Absolutely. You know, I think so many people have passion or they have a thought or a concept, and a lot of them want to bring it to life. And I think that's an entrepreneur's dream, right? Like, how do I bring this to market, or how do I build this company, or how do I, you know, create this? And it could be in any sector in the world. You know, the possibilities are endless, especially in this country. I think that's why so many people want to be here, is because if you can bring something to market or change something within the market, you too can live the American dream. But I think what people really need to understand is that it's a process. Mm. And the rarity of it ever happening like overnight success is one in a million, and they don't tend to last. It might be quite fleeting if you do have an overnight success. It may be a trend or a fad or something that might skyrocket very quickly, but like anything in life, those rockets come down really hard and fast as well. You know, I'm a strong believer in really traditional ways. I'm a strong believer, you know, I always kind of joke, I'm like the Latina Susie Orman,
because,
you know, I'm Latina, but I actually really had an amazing father who taught me financial literacy and the understanding of building and compounding. And so I really took that mindset into my business and when I do business. And so whether it's my personal finances or my business finances, you know, I really work from the ground up. I believe in really strong foundations when it comes to businesses. I think it's crucial to the life of a business. And if you are going to create a brand and you really want it to be a brand that lasts 20, 30 or 40 years, it better have a really good foundation, because as we all saw during COVID, there were plenty of massive conglomerates that actually, you know, the wind blew and they blew over like a deck of cards. They just fell because they didn't have that really solid foundation. And in today's world, we kind of all live like that, don't we? So we live that way in our personal lives and we live that way in our businesses. It doesn't just affect the businesses when that happens. You know, people put their heart and souls into companies. And I just saw someone write on Facebook, I wanted to go into the corporate world, but you know what? It was not for me because one, I felt confined, but on top of it, I was giving them my all and they, some of them went, couldn't pay me. Some of them went under, some of them, their foundations weren't good. So I relied on them for security and they weren't giving me security. So I think that's why you're seeing so many entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I love women like you and your story in terms of, you know, there's no overnight success. You're self-funded. You've been working hard day by day and it's been, you know, decades in the making to, you know, to show where you're at today. And that's very inspiring because I think in our culture, we want quick wins, right? There are other, you know, I'm also self-funded and the way we're kind of building is, yeah, I'm always focused on profitability. I want to make sure we're doing the right thing. Like it's a little bit slower in growth just because of resources versus somebody else who might, you know, raise money and be able to like move faster. And there's nothing wrong with raising money. I think there's a time and place and, you know, everybody has their own journey and there's a lot of successful people. But to your point, it is interesting post-COVID and kind of in the economic world where now there's a lot of businesses that you thought were, they were on Forbes 40 under 40, they're on the magazines. And I'm like, what? They went under? Like, you don't really know what happens behind the scenes. So it's just, I love hearing stories like you because sometimes we can get sidetracked with like, dang, we're not in that retailer, we're not on that magazine. And really, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Like sometimes you don't even know what's happening behind the scenes.
Well, I think it's goals. I can remember dreaming of being in places where I am today. I can remember having dreams about having some of the amazing employees that I have today. God, I wish I could afford this, or I wish I could afford that person. And now they are part of my amazing team. Through the years, I've been able to build my dream team. But in the beginning, it was just me in my home with my little child working, literally strapping boxes up, shipping them out, processing orders, designing, doing everything as an entrepreneur that really didn't have the big budgets to hire a lot of people, to hire massive marketing companies, to hire CFOs, to hire, you know, branding people. I mean, I didn't have all that in the beginning. It was bootstrapped. Just me and my partner just really working our asses off, excuse my French, and trying to make it happen. You know, and so I'm really being dedicated to building that good foundation. And really, you know, we funded it ourselves. I think there was one time I went to the bank and I took on a loan for $50,000, but within a couple months, I paid it back. Like anytime I borrow money from anyone or anything, it's always a monkey on my back. That's just been my mentality since I was a very young person. I'm really super responsible when it comes to that. So I'm not the kind of person that I like to self-fund, you know, and 18 years later, or that's just as a 10, 18 years later, I'm an overnight success, but it's also 100% mine, completely self-funded. So my foundation is really solid. Through COVID, I was able to keep all my employees and just really learn how to maneuver in a whole different way, which was, I think we all learned that through COVID. You know, it's when you get creative and that's the spirit of an entrepreneur.
So Carolyn, one thing you mentioned that I thought was so interesting is, you know, you've always been a stickler for saving money. And listening to a few interviews, you've mentioned even from your very early young days, you knew what you wanted and you were saving money to kind of get there in your teens. So that's not something you hear too often, especially in, you know, someone's upbringing. So tell me more about your childhood and what really influenced you to become financially literate and very thoughtful when it came to money.
I think part of it is just who I am. I can remember, you know, being really young and getting my first $5 bill for my fifth birthday and literally being like, wow, you know, this is like, I was really charged by getting that and thinking I'm going to hang on to this. It wasn't like, what can I go buy? It was, where's my piggy bank? You know, let me build this up. So that and the fact that I had a father who was very financially literate and really sat me down at a very young age and started teaching me about saving. I opened my first bank account when I was 8 years old, and he literally walked me to the bank with my other siblings and showed us how to open it. We had a little passport book, made our journal entries. And then from there, really, as I started getting older, there were some other things throughout the years growing up, but I always had a passion to earn money from a very young age. I did all kinds of odd jobs. I've been working since I was 13 years old, but I really started like 11 or 12 doing things around the neighborhood, garage sales, cleaning people's places, being a golf caddy, whatever I could do. I would get into to make money or earn money. And then as I became older, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur very early on. I was like 16 thinking I want to own a salon or, you know, get into some kind of business. I thought about writing a book. I always was trying to think of ways to make money or be entrepreneurial. I think is more important to me than even making money sometimes.
Sure.
And from that, I had a father who, when I was quite young and was a starving hairdresser just out of beauty school, you know, he's like, listen, you're self-employed. You have to file your own taxes. You have to do your own quarterlies. You have to pay yourself first. You have to buy your own medical insurance. So really, from a very young age, he sat me down. We got computer programs to do my own financial structures, to do my own taxes. I use these to this day. I mean, this is 40 years ago, you know? And that foundation, I think, really gave me a great backbone for that mindset. And that mindset was really some of the trigger things that he taught me, which was, you know, pay yourself first. Those are one of the terms that he always used to say. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean go buy the shoes. Pay yourself first means put that money away for that rainy day, because you never know what it may be that you suddenly have an emergency or you have a situation where you have bills you didn't anticipate. You know, I think our society tends to live by the seat of their pants way too much. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can get to the top. I happened to scrap my way all the way there. You know, it was really about, he used to say, it's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have. So how do you take your 5 cents and turn it into a dime? You know, that was a little trigger words that he used to use to really help describe, like helping me understand compounding and building slowly. And that's what it's about, not only in our personal finances, but also within business. So that mindset, I think, really helps me to this day. I'm just really, you know, really, really disgustingly responsible when it comes to money. I always tell my friends now, I'm just like a poor person stuck in a rich person's body now, because I, to this day, have a hard time, you know, living a real extravagant life, even though I probably have the capabilities. I love to give back. I love to do a lot of philanthropy. Yeah, I just, you know, I don't care. I hate to be wasteful. So yeah. I shop the sales, I get, you know, and a lot of that is how I've built my empire. I buy real estate and I buy it right. I mean, I funded a lot of my companies through real estate. So you just get really creative. Someone once asked me at an event I was speaking at, and one of the women stood up and said, listen, it's really hard times for me. You could tell she was really reaching out. She's like, this was in New York. I'm here. Everything's really expensive. I'm, you know, trying. I said, listen, it's when you get creative. Right? It's when you don't buy $5 coffees every day and you make your coffee at home and you pack a lunch and little things like that add up. People do not realize how much money and we waste on things that we sometimes don't always need.
I've met so many just incredible, successful women like you. And I think what you said is so true. Like your mentality, you know, now that you have a lot of zeros behind you, but you're still the same person that you were before.
I'm a fashionista. What can I say? TJ Maxx is one of the runway. Okay, I made it to the runway at TJ Maxx, but I still love to bargain hunt. I love to the sale racks. You know, it's just, I don't like to be wasteful. And in business, I don't like people assuming my money is theirs. So if we're going to negotiate a contract or we're going to do some business together, just because I'm a big company with a lot of money doesn't mean I want to waste it. So let's figure out how this can be a win-win for both of us.
Hey everyone, it's Yasmin here. In 2020, I was struggling with some debilitating health stuff. I just got off birth control and suddenly I had acne, mood swings, breast tenderness, and really painful periods. I tried so many things, but the one thing that worked was something called seed cycling. I know you're probably thinking, seed cycling? What the heck is that? It's a natural way to support your hormones using 4 specific seeds throughout your cycle. The challenge is that seed cycling can be a little complicated to do and kind of time consuming. So I decided to make an organic seed cycling product that is so easy to use. We make it effortless for anyone to get started today. It's called Bia, and it's a super easy way to add something powerful to your diet to support your hormones, regulate your cycle, and bring back balance. To learn more about Bia and join our community with thousands of incredible women all over the world, go to BiaWellness.com, and that's spelled B-E-E-Y-A Wellness.com. And check out the show notes for our promo code to get $10 off your first purchase. Thanks so much for listening, and now let's get back to today's episode. And you know what's so interesting that your dad told you was pay yourself first? Because I've had a lot of women on this podcast who kind of reflect on the biggest lessons they had. And they're like, you know, I wish I took money out from the beginning, because naturally, right, you're building something, you're not getting paid, and you just want to make it work. So you're reinvesting every dollar into the business, which I know you did. But I love that your dad kind of put the mentality of, you know, take a little bit off the table for those rainy days, right? I love that.
Absolutely. And like anything, there's a balance in it. So yes, I mean, listen, I've had to bootstrap many times throughout the almost 20 years that I've been doing this. This is just hair product manufacturing, not even my businesses before then, where, you know, there were times where it was really tight and you had to figure out a way to maybe cut things back to make it happen. And sometimes I wouldn't take a paycheck. That's okay too. But also, you know, where there are those times where you know you're generating more, that doesn't mean go spend it. That means figure out a way to get that nest egg in there, because the next big project you want to fund, it'd be nice if you actually could fund it and not have to borrow for it. And as a company grows, one of the most important parts of growth within a company is managing the growth. And that means managing the financial aspects of the growth. The growth doesn't mean let me get scattered and try to do everything at once. Growth means little bites, as I mentioned, you know, crawl, walk, run. And if you're really stay focused and really concentrate on what it is you're trying to achieve little by little, because not everything can happen overnight. And I think that, like you mentioned, especially in our younger society, they believe everything should just happen instantly. And it should happen real big, real fast. And that isn't really the reality of true solid anything in life, relationships, businesses, anything, right? It's really about putting the time in, investing, experiencing it. Really live in the moment as you build a company. Really experience it. Every little bump, every little up or down. And so, you know, it's all part of learning through the process. And that's, to me, one of the funnest things about being an entrepreneur is learning. I mean, to this day, I love learning. And so, you know, I try to surround myself at all times with people I can learn from, and also inspire the people that I work with, because they also look to me for inspiration. And so it's really kind of this balancing act.
I love that. And what you said is so powerful in terms of, you know, you love to learn. And I think so much of business is tackling problems, and your mindset is not like, oh gosh, another issue. It's what can I learn from this? What can I do from this? And I think that's what also has contributed to so much of your success over the past, you know, 20 plus years in all your businesses is your mindset. And one thing that I'm so curious about is you mentioned, you know, your team obviously looks at you for inspiration, and we all have those tough moments. You know, I don't know, we can look at COVID or just, you know, normal business issues. I know you have multiple businesses under your belt, so I can't imagine what you're dealing with, but do you ever have those days where you're like, man, this week was tough and you don't feel inspired? How do you reset or deal with those mental challenges that you might go through when you have those tougher moments that are more consecutive back to back?
That's a great question, because tough weeks are tough weeks. You know, there's sometimes literally, and I don't care how many years you're in business, it's not for the weary. You are constantly putting out fires. That's what being an entrepreneur is. And the fires, they cannot create a fear within you. You know, you definitely need that fireman mentality where you're about to, you're the one who's going to be running into the burning building and you're going to be the one trying to figure out how to put the fire out. So that's just part of life. And sometimes some weeks are harder than others. And there, those are those weeks where, you know what, that's when you better love what you do. So it's super, super important to really love what you do. Don't do it for the money. Do it because you love what you do, because then it doesn't always feel like work. And so even if you have a bad week, there's going to be a little, you know, nugget in there that's going to keep you inspired. I always compare it to like golf. I don't know how people play golf. To me, it's like the most frustrating, like, okay, you may have one good shot out of three times playing 18 holes. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, this can be a really frustrating sport, but it's that one good swing where you're like, oh my God, I did that so good. Or, you know, oh, I chipped that so awesome or whatever. Don't ask me to do it again. Yeah. I may not do it again for another like 4 months, but,
yes.
But it keeps people going, right? And that's how I feel about my industry, my career. I just love what I do. I literally was a child proclaiming I wanted to be in the beauty industry. And I wanted to be a hairdresser at 8 years old. So it's really good when you find your niche. And that doesn't always come first thing. I mean, I was fortunate. I wavered, though. I was going to be a nurse. I went into nursing at the later years in high school and thought I was going to be something else. But you don't always find it first swing. Sometimes you got to, you know, get a few under your belt before you really kind of get led to your passion. And so I think, you know, it's a major part of being successful. Is not, you know, always feeling like you're working. If I have a kind of a tough week, I get my beauty services. They rejuvenate me. Like I'll go get, you know, a facial, or I'll go do something for me that makes me feel good. You know, because when I'm together, my head's together, my mind's together, my whole psyche's together. You know, that's the power of what industry I'm in. I mean, the beauty industry is incredibly empowering. And, you know, I partake.
Yes. No, that makes sense. And one thing we didn't talk about, which I want to rewind a little bit, is, you know, your childhood. You were in foster care, you were adopted. And I'm curious, do you think, looking back at your upbringing and your experience, like, does that motivate you to kind of take advantage of life in any way or kind of impact who you are today?
Well, you know, I feel very, very fortunate. I was adopted at the age of 2 by a wonderful family, but I was in foster care, you know, up into my toddler years. And, you know, I have a 3-year-old right now. You know, I sit there and I look at her and I think, oh my God, can you imagine? Like I was shuffled around, you know, when I was her age. You know, I was fortunate to have been raised in a really great family, but I also connected with my birth family when I was 26 years old.
Really?
So I was also fortunate to get to know who I was. I'm 100% Puerto Rican. So, I mean, I didn't know that until I was 26 years old. So I really think that it's a combination, a melting pot. I'm definitely a melting pot. I definitely was always very Latina, very different than the people that raised me. But yet, you know, they showed me how to live life. I think I take a little bit of both, though. There is power in genetics, but there's also a tremendous amount of power in environment. And environment is really, as I mentioned, you know, my family I was raised with really empowered me in a whole nother level. And so I think that was the icing on the cake. I think Latin people have a bit of a flair and a spice about them anyways. That was running through my veins, but they kind of tamed the horse a bit. And they definitely, I think, educated me and really opened my mind to all the possibilities that, you know, where I am today.
And, you know, I know you were speaking about how you were a hairdresser for so long and you wanted to have a salon and your family was so supportive. Fast forwarding a little bit, but when was a moment where you were like, all right, I'm ready to do something different. I'm ready to create products. What was that turning point for you when you were running your salon?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I kind of fell into product manufacturing. So I had gotten married and kind of stepped from behind the chair. So, and it was my partner at the time was like, let's start a hair product line. And I was like, okay, you know, but listen, my 18 years of behind the chair and my frustration after touching thousands of heads and using thousands of product made it really easy for me to want to create a line, because I was frustrated as a stylist and a salon owner. I used to cherry pick in my salon. I carried 14 different lines because there wasn't one line where all the products were good. And I used to think to myself, why can't they just make one whole product that has amazing products in it? Well, now I know it's hard. And, yeah. You know, but that was what I set out to do. Every product had to be a 10. And so that definitely, it's interesting. That's what I'm talking about. Did I ever think I was going to be a hair product manufacturer? No, mm-hmm. It fell in my lap. So my journey through my career led me to where I am today. Loving what I do led me to where I am today. I say I just traded my scissors for bottles. I still make people look and feel beautiful. And so I think keeping an open mind and letting the river of entrepreneurship or your career river, let the current take you sometimes. Because there are reasons there is currents. You know, they always say, I mean, things happen for a reason. Believe it or not, they do. Sometimes when you lose a job, that means the next door is going to open. That may be a little different, but grow from it, learn from it, and, you know, really take it as that. Don't take it as devastating, because things do happen for reasons in life. So sometimes I think the difference between people who move through that rather than letting it destroy them or being bitter about it are the ones that tend to grow and then take it and move on from it.
That's so powerful. And talking about moving through it, I know this first business that you guys launched, you invested all your money at the time, which, you know, for you was quite a bit back then because you were hustling.
Everything we had.
And you lost it all. So tell me more about what happened and maybe some of the biggest learnings you had from that first business that didn't end up working out.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the beginning, we really tried to do everything very a la carte. So we were literally, you know, when you see one bottle on the shelf, there may be 20, 30 different vendors that go into creating that end product. You know, I always kind of compare it to like building a house. You know, when you see a house, it's a beautiful thing sitting on the curb, but there are a tremendous amount of vendors that go into actually bringing it to life. And hair care isn't that different. So I think we tried to do everything ourselves, and we had quality control issues. We had too many moving parts. You know, I understand why there's a Home Depot now. You can walk in and every single thing you could ever need to build a house is under one roof. That's what I call brilliant business. Because why should I go to a plumbing store, an electrical store, a wood store, a screwdriver store, when I can go to Home Depot? And so that's really how I thought about it. When we failed in the beginning and we had all the quality control issues and things that I thought that was too much to get all these people simultaneously to go and coincide to create one end product sitting on a shelf. I should have gone more one-stop shop. Go to vendors that actually can provide you with multiple services and they're more cohesive. And then also when there's issues, they can step up more and take some of that burden off you rather than trying to manage every little, you know, okay, the drywall came in warped. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I have to run out. I'm like, no, if you go to Home Depot, it's, you know, all there. I mean, they'll have a whole nother, you know, high rise of drywall sitting right there. Bring it back and return the nails at the same time. You see the mindset when I'm trying to explain?
Totally.
It's really, really important to have really dependable vendors and people that you do business with when you're creating things in business. And that can go really far, not just the bolts and nuts. I'm talking accountants, I'm talking attorneys, I'm talking every aspect of a business. They have to be very, very reliable and good partners, because they are partners to you.
Yes. And that is the magic sauce. I'm only 3 years in. And now that our business is growing, there's certain vendors where I'm like, I don't know if I want to stay, like, relationship wise, it's not the right fit. So I've kind of moved a little bit. But how important is just relationships when it comes to working with different partners in your business?
Listen, it's everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Networking is everything. Relationships are everything. And sometimes you have to walk away from bad relationships in it, just like real life. And that doesn't mean you don't care for them. I can remember some over the years, you know, I've switched vendors or moved from relationships throughout business, especially as I started to grow. I mean, there were some, they just couldn't handle my growth, right? So I had to move to another direction, somebody I knew that had a little bit more of the bandwidth and the power to actually support me. And, you know, a lot of times they got really, really angry with me. You know, at the bottom of my signature, it says, as always, committed to your success. And I can remember them saying, oh, committed to your success, huh? How are you committed to my success? You're leaving me. Well, they shouldn't have taken it personally. You know, we all grow and expand and move for reasons. And, you know, that's one thing about business. I can honestly tell you, you're starting to learn that you're going to have to leave some people behind. It's kind of like life. And sometimes it can be the best thing in the world for you, but maybe not so much for them. And that's okay too, because business is business. And you better realize that young, because otherwise you're going to be in relationships and situations that aren't good for you. And all it's going to do is hurt you.
Yeah. And what I've realized is just, and I love to hear that. It's just a good reminder, even for me, and I'm sure a lot of women listening in, is you're going to disappoint people, right? As you grow. And I love to hear that, because you can't, in business, you can't people please everybody. It's just, it's going to make you a disaster and not be the right fit for the company. And
I think that's a great point, in the fact that you mentioned women. Okay. So many people ask me, for a woman in business, how is it, one, being in a man's world? Because people don't realize the beauty industry is run by men. So I'm one of the very few women, especially at my level, within this beauty industry. And two, how is it when you're in a room full of men? And I always say, you know what? I mean, that's a great mindset, because we are empathetic creatures. Yeah. And sometimes we tend to rule with our hearts rather than our heads. That's the difference between men and women. They can be a little more cut and dry and a little more factual, you know? And so I think that that's where I've been able to succeed a little bit more. And I've learned some hard lessons along the way, because I haven't done it quite enough at times. I also have been able to move on from situations when I need to. And I handle it myself when it's time to do it. I don't ask other people to do it. You can do things very gracefully, but still be very factual and you know, have a certain kind sternness about you. Still be womanly, still be empathetic, but have the facts behind you and really, you know, explain to people why it's time that we part our ways. And so I think that that's the beauty of a woman. We can tend to meld those two parts. I think it's really good we are empathetic in business, because in today's world, people don't want to work for companies that are just mm-hmm. They want to work for companies where they're happy, they're heard, they feel like they matter. And I think that's why you're seeing more CEOs as women, because we have the ability to have that empathy a little bit and actually mix it with business.
And I'm sure it's just a muscle that you've built, because you said, you know, you've learned lessons along the way, but is it just being in those uncomfortable situations, showing up, being clear, but being kind, that you get those reps in to be better at that?
Yeah, for sure. Listen, it's like anything in life. It's like a star who goes on stage every day. They still get butterflies, you know? And I don't care how many years I've been doing this. I've been in the beauty industry 40 years now. So, you know, 40 years later, there are still moments where I may get butterflies. Yeah. But I use that to motivate me. I use that to be better. I don't use it to cripple myself. That's the difference. I'm older now. And so when I get those butterflies, my brain starts going and I think, okay, how do I handle this situation with grace and brains and my power of knowledge, having done this for so many years? So that's, you know, the way you do it. Just show them what you know. And sometimes even people that you necessarily engage with on that level, they kind of like, she's undeniable. She's kind of right. Like, yeah. I get it. As much as I don't like it.
Yes.
I kind of get it. You know?
Totally. No, I love that. It's just the theme of like showing up. You still get those butterflies, so that's okay, but you still show up. And I think, like you said, even in your personal life, that's important to have conversations like that.
That's right. And they can be hard sometimes, but they need to be had. So, and I'll tell you, I think also I was able to do it because I grew up with three older brothers. I was never afraid to be the only girl in the group. I would play sports with them. I would, you know, if I wanted to join them if I couldn't beat them. And so that was kind of the way I grew up anyway. So I'm sure it has helped me. People who haven't necessarily had that under their belt, you just kind of got to put your, you know, big girl panties on and go for it, because it'll be a learning process, and in time and over time, it gets easier.
Totally. I love that. It's very, very inspiring. So you and your husband at the time had launched this business, a lot of learnings, you know, it didn't work out. What was the timeline for you guys to start, or for you to start It's a 10? And, you know, you're like, all right, let's do it again. Let's create something different.
We really had the other company for a couple of years and got divorced. And we were divorced when we started It's a 10, because things just weren't working out, but we both had a passion for the beauty industry. So during our divorce, we each We had $80,000 less. We each got $40,000 out of it. We lost like $500,000 almost. So we split up our money and took that $80,000 and bought closeout bottles because we had no money to buy expensive packaging. And we started with one bottle, the Miracle Leave-In product that sells over 10 million bottles a year now.
Wow.
So we scrapped. We figured it out. We buckled down. We learned from our mistakes and we proceeded on, and we were fortunate enough to get through a lot of hurdles and build the company. And after 10 years, I bought him out. And that's how I became the sole owner of It's a 10 Hair Care.
There's so much to unpack there. And I want to hit a few of the main points. You mentioned that you bought out your partner, right? I'm sure there's a lot of learnings. I haven't had any partner buyouts yet, but I've witnessed a few friends kind of going through it. Any lessons or learnings you had kind of from your experience, you know, partnering, I guess, with your ex-husband and then buying him out? Any learnings when it comes to a co-founder or partners and things that women should be thinking about?
I think it's not just about women, but it's about the entire process of having partners and really just making sure that there are some things in place that if things don't work out, you guys can figure a way out. It is a form of a marriage. And so that process can be really, really ugly, or it can be okay. Because there are people who get divorced peacefully and find a way to each go their individual ways. That's really my biggest advice, is when, if you are going to have a partner, if you are going to go in partnership, just make sure you have really, really solid shareholder agreements, solid understandings of who's going to do what, and what does that mean to the company, and what happens if they do not uphold their end. That's a major, major part of it. You know, you start a company with someone, and the next thing you know, they haven't showed up for 2 weeks because they're partying in Tahiti. I mean, it happens. And so then you're literally doing all the work and they're taking half the paycheck. So these are really, really important things to make sure that you have proper agreements in place from day one, because it's not always rosy and it really can go awry. But if you have solid agreements, things can work out.
Yeah. And would you recommend always being, because I've interviewed a lot of people and they've said, you know, I will only be 51% or more like majority owner. Do you have any say on that? Or do you think you could be 50-50, but it just depends on how you guys kind of structure that partnership and shareholder agreement?
I will never, ever be 50-50 again as long as I live. Yeah.
It's good to hear. I have a brother, both my dad and my brother are entrepreneurs. And I worked with my brother for a little bit and he said, like, I will always be 51%. And back then I didn't understand what that meant, but now a little bit older, living the life. Yeah.
I am a serial entrepreneur now. I'm many, many different avenues of business, multiple in the business in the beauty industry, but many in other industries now. And some of them are with my current husband, and I am 51% on everything. Yeah. I will never, ever, ever go through that again.
Yeah. No, it's good learnings, because sometimes you don't even think about all this. You're excited about the idea. Exactly. You're doing it with a friend. Exactly. You're like, oh, we'll figure it out later. Mm-hmm. Like, I worked with my family and I, through that process, I was like, oh, we need an operating agreement. Like, this is not just like, oh, we're working together. So I went through my own learnings at a smaller scale, but it's good to talk about because you don't think about
it. No, I started very small too. So, I mean, it's super, super important. You have buyout clauses, you have performance clauses, you have sometimes perpetuity clauses, which means their behavior, can they do something to actually help hurt the brand? A lot of stars will get that, you know, like Tiger Woods probably had a perpetuity clause that he ended up, you know, paying dearly for, because sometimes people's private actions really hurt brands. So, you know, these are all really important things that people don't realize. If you have good legal advice, these are the things they will automatically put into contracts. And listen, do it with your best friends, do it with your family, do it with, I don't care who you're going into business with. All the more reason that you need to make sure things are outlined more, especially if it's somebody you know personally.
Yeah. So if it's a family member or friend, I feel like more so, be more like so, very anal.
More so. And what the problem is more, most people do the opposite. They figure, oh, exactly. I can trust them. Oh, we don't need to write it down. Oh, we don't need to memorialize it. It's actually the opposite.
Yeah. And I've heard, like, you think that's the case in the beginning, but once those zeros start coming in, the business starts scaling, like people can be and act in a different way. I've heard, I haven't experienced that, but
it's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good to know. And, you know, we talked about earlier in the podcast, you were mentioning the foundations of a business is so important. You know, one thing we're talking about, you were saying, you know, having a strong operating agreement, partnership agreement, you know, good lawyers up front.
Great accountants.
Yeah. What would be some other foundational things that women should think about who are listening in if they're thinking about kind of starting their next venture?
Yeah, I think, listen, obviously you have your basics of your concepts. You start with your concepts, right? But how do we bring those concepts to life? And then how do we memorialize them? And those are two very different things. So bringing them to life, we have business plans. We have ways that we want to see our dreams come into reality, our visions, our ideas, our conquests. Because sometimes it can be, maybe it's a marketing company or a company that's just all about getting, you know, moving deals. Or listen, attorneys, they just push paper. They have to know a lot of law. They're not really selling anything but themselves, right? So, you know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of businesses you can go into where it's really, really important that you make sure that you do the proper movements throughout that process. It's not just like, oh, I want to open a law firm and hang my, you know, plaque out and have people start coming in. You have to set up things properly. And it can go quite deep, depending on what industry you're in. I mean, with my industry, I have compliancy issues I have to make sure that are properly, you know, because I'm in ingredients and products that people put on their head and makeup on their eyes. And there's a lot of compliancy that goes within my industry. People don't think about, oh, I want to make a makeup line. Do you know what that means? Do you understand how much compliancy you have to get approved for before you actually go to market? I mean, how about trademarks? How about legalizing your branding, making sure you're set up? How about IP? Legalizing your IP, that's intellectual property. Make sure you own it. I cannot tell you how many product lines have come to life and they didn't even own their own products because they went to fillers and they went to vendors and they didn't set up the proper contracts so that they would own their own products. I went through that as well. So all of this is through my years of experience, the journey that I've taken, the hard road, you know, the mistakes I've made, and the battles I've had to fight to really get to where I am.
And that's so comforting to hear, because I'm just reiterating what you're saying. Like, you've gone through your own learnings and you've gone through your own challenges and your own fights. And that's part of the process, right? It's like, it's not always going to be rosy in business. It's like, you're going to go through problems. You're not going to know everything. You know, we do our best to listen to women like you to be a little bit more educated going into it, but we're always going to stumble, and that's just part of it. So even at least for me going through my own journey, hearing stories like yours, I'm like, every time I hit some hardship or something happens, I'm like, all right, well, those 50 women I interviewed, they've all gone through something like this, and this is part of it. So it kind of helps me be more resilient along the way.
It is. As I mentioned, there's some things that are part of it that you can't even wrap your head around.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're in it up to here and you're like, I didn't know this was part of it.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn real fast that it was, but that's okay. That's what I was talking about. Understand, you're the fireman and there's a fire every day. And, you know, you may have to put it out, but that's okay. Actually, through the years, that becomes the thrill of it for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It gets to the point as you get better at it, you're like, okay, who's next?
Yes. I know, when things are a little stable, you're like, what's next? Yeah. Like, what do I need to do?
Like, it's like, literally, it's like you start understanding and using your talents that you've learned through the years to actually kind of maybe even avoid some of them, right? You actually start having the foresight more, and you have the knowledge to, when things do arise, okay, let's get the Rolodex out. Who am I going to call? How am I going to work through this? That's an old term young people don't know, because we don't have Rolodexes.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that. People don't know Rolodexes.
So, but it's that mindset. Like, who can I network with? Who can I learn from to get through this? Who can help me cross this bridge? And you just start reaching out, doing your own research. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of reading up on it and educating yourself on it. Understand that you cannot expect anyone to do anything for you or your company that you're not willing to do yourself. So if there's something you don't know about, get the books out and start learning, because it's really important. You just don't lay everything on everyone else. Because sometimes, and that's everything, accounting, law, So it's funny, I've had an attorney for quite a few years now, and he calls me, oh, you're my paralegal. I literally get there right with him, and we do it together. Sometimes I have some interjections. You know, remember, attorney isn't in my business.
Exactly.
Sometimes I have to interject about possibly he has something in the contract that he wouldn't think of because it's not my industry. So, you know, it's really, really important to be heavily involved in every aspect of your company and not just say, okay, I'm going to hire someone to do it. I mean, yes, hire them, but learn from them as you hire them and kind of get involved and be ready to put on every hat because it's actually fun. Too.
Yeah. And you're the only person that can see every aspect of the business. No one else has that purview. So it's like, it's good for you to be involved. And like you said, with lawyers, they don't know the ins and outs of your business to the extent of you. So you can come in and be
That's some great advice I would give to anybody. Never accept business advice from an attorney, and they will try to give it to you all the time. That's not where you should be getting your business advice from.
You know, I have a question kind of looking back at your life. What would you say, and this is a big question, would be maybe one of the proudest moments that you have of yourself? It could be personally or professionally as you kind of reflect back on everything that you've created.
I have too many.
Oh, list them.
Honestly, I literally like there's probably, especially over the last few years since I have owned this company independently, as my husband said, you know, Oz came from behind the curtain, so to speak. And so I think over, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, I would say probably just finally being recognized for what I have done for so many years already. I think that's definitely some of my proudest moments, to have been gotten legacy awards, to have been recognized for my industry. It took me probably 14 years before I even became recognized within my industry. Now I get awards all the time. I'm like, wow, they keep rolling in. 50, over 50, Forbes magazine. I mean, I can go on and on and on and on. I mean, I just got the key to the city of Miami. To me, it's the best city in the world. I think as you get older, I always say when I turned in my 40s, I became justified. In your 50s, you're recognized. And that's what the difference is.
That's really interesting. I'm in my 30s. And, you know, when you are running your own business, you're recognizing people that work with you, but you don't really have people recognizing you. No one's telling you, good job, Yasmin, for working on that. You're kind of just behind the scenes, you know, doing your thing and building this business and being everyone else's cheerleader. So it's nice, I could imagine, to finally feel recognized for all that blood, sweat, and tears you've done to build something years later.
Yes.
But I love that. So you were saying your 40s is when you're justified.
You become justified in your 40s. And your 50s, you become recognized. So it really becomes where you get your accolades. You know, it's Lifetime Achievement Awards, you know, Beauty Industry Awards. Literally, with the people that I used to dream about, you know, being as successful of them or being so inspired for them, you know, being on the same, getting the same legacy awards as Paul Mitchell from, you know, John Paul DeJurio, the owner of Paul Mitchell. I mean, you know, things like that. I mean, I can remember wishing I could be as big as a Paul Mitchell or, you know what I'm saying? It, you know, these people are some of the people that inspired me. And so, you know, it's really, really cool to be recognized in the way that I have been. And I think the unique thing is that I'm one of the only female-owned brands of my size. So, and Latina at that. So, but, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, being Latina is, we're all wonderful people, you know, whatever culture you're from. I think being a woman in this industry and having made it, yeah, I'm pretty proud of that.
And what's so amazing, because I do have some friends who also have big businesses, but they don't want to be the face of it. And I look at you and I'm like, I love that you're out there and you're being recognized because it shows what's possible to other women, right? Like you are showing what is possible, sharing your story, getting that award, someone looking at you and be like, wow, Carolyn looks like me and someone I know. So I love that because, you know, at least for my own journey, it wasn't until I was meeting women like you where I thought, oh, I could do this. You know, it's not always male dominated. There's a different way of being super successful in business.
And we can go even deeper and foster child, right? Do you know how many foster kids I hope are inspired by me? Yes, you too can do it. How about hairdresser? Do you know how many hairdressers are like, you know, never thinking they could just be like a worldwide brand? I mean, yes, I was a hairdresser. So we can go on and on and on. I mean, it's like really, as I mentioned, that journey of your career and your life, that river that takes you down the current that takes you down the river? You're going to fight it and try to swim the other way because you're scared? Are you going to go with the current?
You're so amazing, Carolyn. It was such an honor to interview today. I cannot wait for your book. There's so many things that I'm sure in there that's going to be just so inspiring from your story that we didn't get into, but this was amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Yasmin. It's such an honor to be on your amazing podcast, and good luck, much more in your future. And I know you're going to do amazing things.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Behind Her Empire. If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to me if you would consider leaving a review or even sharing this episode with someone who might be inspired to create their own empire. To stay updated on new episodes or join our private community, visit behindherempire.com to sign up. We send inspiring and short emails every week to your inbox. I'll see you next week, and until then, remember, you're always in charge of your own destiny, and it's never too late to start your own empire.